You're listening to Shoreditch Radio. Shoreditchradio.co.uk.
Navidad con Titi Henry. Henry para Messi. Messi, el pase para Henry es buenísimo. Henry. ¡Gol! ¡Gol! ¡Titi!
And it looked like it was in. It came back off the bend on Tony.
Para Alves con Messi para Xavi. Vamos a ver qué hace Xavi, esconde el balón, Xavi. ¡Qué balón para Messi! ¡Puede marcar Messi! ¡Gol! ¡De Messi!
A man is prevented from boarding a Paris metro train, and all because of the colour of his skin. On today's show, we're joined by the editor who claims he's milking it. A special interview with David Johnston, the Chelsea fanzine editor, whose comments on BBC Radio 5 Live have caused quite a stir, coming up later this hour. And it's a pretty Chelsea-heavy show this afternoon, as the self-professed happy one, Jose Mourinho, was anything but following his side's 1-1 draw with Burnley. Does he have a point, though? Plus, how do you feel about a World Cup Christmas? That's all before we round off the hour with Take a Bow, and of course, you can expect some great music along the way as well. This is Shoreditch Radio's premier football talk show, where we won't hide from the stories that matter to all of you. This is where we promise to kick some sense back into football. This is In Off The Post. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Adonis, and welcome to what I expect to be one of the most interesting and certainly more controversial episodes that we've produced to date. And in order to help us wade through the heaps of misinformation, to read in between the lines, and to hopefully help us restore some semblance of sense to a game which we all love, but which, in truth, has been dragged through the mud this last week, I'm joined in the studio once again by my co-host for the hour. He's more than just our resident betting guru. Ladies and gents, please join me in welcoming back John Christodoulou to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Cheers, man.
Well, welcome back, buddy. It's always a pleasure to have you here with me. And to be honest, I'm not sure how I'd cope without you these days.
I'm going to have to start asking you to pay me. Just buy me dinner or something.
Okay. All right. Steak dinner it is. And look, we're going to dive into these stories soon. But I just wanted to, you know, ask you before we do, without giving too much away, of course, while we'd all prefer to marvel at some of the brilliant football on display over the weekend, it's been largely marred by the events off the field, hasn't it?
Yeah, big time. I mean, I think most of the stuff you'll hear over the week that we've just had has been negative rather than all the positive that things have happened in football.
And it's always a great shame when that happens. I mean,
there's been some really exciting matches, some great goals, and you won't hear about any of that.
That's it, almost overshadowed.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, a gentle reminder to all of our listeners that this afternoon and all week long, in fact, we're encouraging you to have your say on the big stories. Tweet us your thoughts at IOTP Show, or leave us a comment on the official Facebook page. That's www.facebook.com/ShoreditchRadioIOTP. Now, before we start, we like to play a quick song to ensure you're all awake as we prepare to go through the motions one more time this week. You're listening to In Off The Post, live from Shoreditch Radio HQ and a little Daft Punk.
One more time.
Daft Punk and One More Time. You're listening to In Off The Post. And John, we've got a lot to get through, so frankly, we better get started. And look, we're going to kick it off with the Chelsea boss, Jose Mourinho, who hours after watching his side draw with Premier League strugglers Burnley, then let loose a tirade of criticism on referees, on Burnley's Ashley Barnes, and weirdly on Arsenal too. And look, let's face it, this has been coming for quite a while. I think that's fair to say, especially when you consider the campaign against his side, which, you know, a conspiracy that Jose is becoming increasingly convinced of. You know, he's been fined by the FA three times last season, once already this year. We could have predicted this was coming, right? Boiling point. Yeah. Melting point.
It's all culminated, hasn't it, this weekend, where just all of this conspiracy that you've spoken about has reached boiling point. And, you know, he went on goals on Sunday to almost... not tell his point, he gets a chance to tell his point of view after every game, but really just have at it.
Yeah.
And I felt sorry for Ben Shepherd a little bit in that show because he got the full, the brunt of the special ones.
And you noticed almost every question he was asking, he was kind of winging it. He had no idea what was coming.
Yeah, there was probably a guy in his ear just saying, don't answer that, Ben, don't answer that. Just send him somewhere else, another topic.
A presenter's nightmare, I can assure you. And look, nevertheless, it was, you know, this weekend's outburst really stemmed from that game at the Bridge on Saturday. And John, to say the referee had a difficult afternoon would be an understatement, would it not?
I mean, there's 4 or 5 big decisions that, if you're a Chelsea fan, you've said they've not gone your way. So good, 2 clear penalty shouts, the tackles that were made by Barnes. And for the referee, it was just an awful day. And I mean, referees get a lot of criticism for their performances, sometimes unjust. But Martin Atkinson just didn't go for him that day on Saturday. And what can you do but criticise his performance, because they're big decisions,
and they change the game.
Definitely.
And let's look at those tackles in a bit more depth. We've got the one on Ivanovic and the one on Matic. Obviously, Matic reacts to the second one violently and is banned. Obviously, we've heard it's been reduced to just 2 games, not 3. So he only misses the League Cup final, of course. I say only. It's a League Cup final and a game against West Ham. So firstly, let's think about the way that those players reacted to the challenge. It's something we spoke about before we came on air today. The way that they... get up after rolling around 5 or 6 times on the floor. Does that influence the referee?
It must do. It must. I mean, if you keep seeing players doing that over and over again, you're really not sure which players are actually hurt. Are they injured or are they just...
it must be so difficult to tell.
And they don't really get any help, referees. We spoke about other sports where there's 10, 15 officials on the pitch at any one time and there's cameras and they get so much help. Referees are on their own out there on a football pitch. So... If they miss something or they don't see anything, then that's it. They only get one chance to make a decision. And all of this influences the decisions that they make. And then the Ivanovic one, the first one, it was a yellow card tackle easily by Barnes. But his reaction afterwards, he rolls around like 3 times, faints injury, and then gets back up and starts running and like pointing his finger at the ref. And
and Matic even worse so.
Matic, I mean...
So do you have any sympathy for the players? I mean, then we're saying the challenges were reckless, but the players weren't injured.
They weren't hurt, yeah. So I mean, you don't want to see tackles like that, but I kind of have no sympathy for the way they react. And Matic, obviously, he's very, very unlucky. It was a terrible tackle and he's going to miss the final. But I guess this for him is a lesson learned.
Certainly hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, people have kind of been throwing around the notion that, you know, he gets a 3-game ban, and obviously now it's only 2 games, as opposed to how long you'd be sidelined if your leg were broken. Well, the fact is, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't. And he's very lucky. In the same token, Barnes is very lucky, even retrospectively, that he hasn't been punished, which is a bit surprising, seeing as I think most people would say both of them tackles deserved yellows at the minimum.
Yeah.
So... it works both ways, and obviously we're always a little bit confused and perplexed by the way the FA works, but
to say the least. And look, you know, Mourinho was in top gear in his post-game interviews. You know, at one stage I wasn't sure if he was putting in a takeaway order with Jeff Shrees. Number 33, number 37, I think 67 is a lamb tikka madras or something like that. But of course he was referring to those incidents which he felt decided the game, all of which Martin Atkinson actually admitted to not seeing. Now, that's got to worry you.
It's very worrying. And I mean, it's interesting because apparently there was a couple that he did see. That's why the FA don't retrospectively punish Barnes, for instance, for the second tackle.
Yeah.
He didn't get retrospective punishment because the referee saw it but decided not to give anything. But then, obviously, that completely contradicts what
he said afterwards.
What he said. And I mean, I think we spoke about it as well. Keith Hackett said that the former.
Dishing out the notes there.
I was just trying to. I want to get it right. His title, the former referees chief Keith Hackett.
Yes.
You know, he described his performance as incompetent, which is pretty damning criticism. You know, but at the same time, Martin Atkinson has refereed the most games this season.
Really?
For a referee, and that's 3 days after he's just done an away fixture in the Champions League, refereeing Real Madrid versus Schalke, and then he's thrown into another. Every Premier League is pretty much a big game.
Yeah,
and. We say this about players. Do they need rest? Do they need just time out? And maybe that's exactly what Martin Atkinson's...
And then, of course, we're encountering the problem of a shortage of quality referees to be able to rotate them in this way. And, you know, Marino is the one who drew on it himself. Technology. It's the simplest answer.
It's so, so simple, isn't it?
I mean, it seems so.
You would think switching 30 seconds to either a video camera, an independent little panel of three people who can make decisions there on the spot... and say, yes, that is a foul, yes, that's over the line, et cetera, that would just... And they do it in so many other sports.
You mentioned it right there. Was it over the line? Look how goal line technology has already cleared up so many debates already this year.
And it takes no effort at all. It's a little ping that goes to the referee's watch and just says, no goal, goal.
Mourinho added, if we want to protect the integrity of the referee and believe that the mistake is the consequence of misinterpretation or a bad position, I think technology can help. Which is, you know, a terribly reasonable argument, you have to say. And when you consider the overall performance of the referees in the top division... this season alone, I agree with him.
Yeah. Saying that, there's the argument that technology does make things worse. Sean Dyche has said for the second tackle that in real time, no one reacts to it except Matic. And it's true, when you look at it real time, it's a bad tackle, but it doesn't look as bad as when you slow it down and you see it.
And you're right, if you watch
frame
it back,
by frame,
surrounding players.
Yeah, Ivanovic, Zuma, Terry, none of them react. Mourinho doesn't even react. Matic is the only one that does. And then you do slow it down, you see just how bad it is. But that's, you can't slow it down to that degree in a football match. It slows things down too much as well, the action. So there does need to be compromise. But I mean, I still think the overarching message is technology will make things infinitely easier for most people, referees.
Amen. Yeah. Well, look, one thing's for sure, and, you know, we've mentioned this point on numerous occasions when speaking about the special one, and it's this, you know, even when he seems to be at his complete wit's end, if you really just take a step back and ask yourself why he's saying what he's saying, it's all in service of his team and deflecting away from what was, in truth, a massive upset. There's no escaping it.
It's 2 points lost for Chelsea at the end of the day.
Against Burnley.
Yep. And then Man City know that, and they go and they...
close the
smash
gap to
Newcastle
fifth.
5-0. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we know that there's going to be the League Cup final this Sunday. That means they're not going to play. City are. If City beat Liverpool, the gap's down to two.
2 points. And that's nothing. Really is nothing.
Well, and Chelsea fans, feel free to disagree with me on this. But what Mourinho is really and truly quite brilliant at doing is creating a siege mentality at his club. You know, it's us against the world and we're going to take them all on together. And, you know, that for me was what those comments about Arsenal were really about. And look, you have to say it's worked spectacularly because no one is talking about a plucky Burnley side who have gone to Stamford Bridge and emerged with a point. You know, Sean Dyche working miracles on a, you know, what is a shoestring budget compared to what Chelsea have. We're not talking about that.
No.
And we're not talking about Chelsea's poor performance either.
We come back to that conspiracy theory. And I think that is one of Jose Mourinho's key ways of motivating his players. Just like you said, it's Chelsea versus everybody else. And maybe it's come at the perfect time for him, right before a League Cup final, because his players are going to be revved up. They meet Tottenham, who beat them in the last League Cup final. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to go out there and try and win. And, I mean, good luck to Tottenham, because it's going to be a very, very difficult match.
Well, even I'd love to see an upset there.
Yeah?
You'd
support Tottenham in that match?
I honestly would like to see an upset there. And I think, I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that when they beat them at the Bridge earlier this season, Matic was absent.
Yep.
There you go. All right, time now for the first song of the show. And how about a little blues for the blues boss, Jose Mourinho, for his mastery of the art of deflection. Once upon a time, I might not have seen through it, but I've learned my lesson. What I'm expecting to be a fascinating interview with the Chelsea fanzine editor, David Johnston, when we return after Willie Davis here on In Off The Post.
We'll was just a bad little boy. My mama used to tell me, son, you gotta read just what you sow. And I remember when I was 82. My mother used to spank me, said, Davis, you're gonna do what I tell you to do. And after I grew up, I had myself a little luck. I had a good woman, but I just didn't know how to treat her right. Sometimes I stay out all night. Oh. Sometimes I forget to come by.
Welcome back to the show, everyone, and thank you for joining us from wherever you're tuning in from this afternoon. Next, we revisit one of the most disturbing aspects of the beautiful game, as racism reared its ugly head again this week when a group of white Chelsea fans, having travelled to Paris for their side's Champions League tie with PSG, prevented a black man, who we now know to be Suleiman S, from boarding a metro train. And just to jog your memories, and, you know, as if you needed reminding, just have a listen to what they were chanting. Perhaps I'm naive to be, you know, so shocked at hearing something like that being chanted so proudly by a group of English fans, but the truth is, I really am.
Shocked?
Yeah. I mean, can you believe that in 2015 we're listening to that?
It is unbelievable. You think we'd pass this. This is the type of thing you'd expect to hear 20 years ago.
Exactly. Sung on the Terraces 20 years ago. You'd think we'd like to think that we've moved on from that, especially here in England. You know, the FA have worked tirelessly to combat racism at domestic games right across the country. And while, you know, you wouldn't expect to necessarily see anything like this at any stadium in the UK, really, there's no denying that it still exists.
I think there's a small minority. You'd like to think
it's a small minority.
In terms of reported incidents, you don't hear about it as much as we may have used to, and it's just a really horrible thing to see, especially before. It's not even, you know, it's in the build up to a game as well, and this has come out afterwards. So imagine if it came out before, it would have just.
Doesn't bear thinking about. And look, you know, when you consider that the FA and the English game is billed as this sort of pillar of tolerance and diversity, and, you know, our FA have been out there condemning Serbian fans for their, you know, what they did in the under 21 game with England, you'll remember, and obviously the Ukrainians also at the Euros not long ago, you know, only now for the world to kind of found out that our own house is far from in order. You know, it must be incredibly embarrassing for them. You know, I'm embarrassed. We should all be embarrassed, shouldn't we?
I don't think we should all be embarrassed. I think there's millions of football fans who are just completely reject racism. They don't want it in the game. So just to paint the entire footballing world with that same brush is probably not... I wouldn't say I'm embarrassed as a football fan. I'm not sure if you would say it as well. But
I'm not sure, because I don't know. I associate myself as an English fan, a representation of the Premier League and English football. And I think those fans are part of us.
But do they reflect your views?
No, not at all. How could they?
Yeah. So it's a difficult question, really. Maybe as a Chelsea fan, I'd be slightly different. I'd feel a bit more embarrassed, because now I think people might think all Chelsea fans are racist, which isn't the case. There's thousands of Chelsea fans who go to match day every Saturday, Sunday, whenever their game's on, and they just like to watch the football, celebrate all the players that they have at their club, and just...
Regardless of what colour their skin is.
And But unfortunately, we get these small minorities whose actions speak louder than the thousands.
Yeah, absolutely.
That do everything that a football fan should be. And it's a real shame.
And I mean, we were speaking before and we were talking about this incident as, you know, you made the point yourself. There is no such thing as anything that could be good that is relative to racism, right?
Yeah, it's very, very hard to think that there's positives in racism, but maybe it's a positive in that it shows that the problem hasn't been buried or it hasn't been banished, because buried is probably not the right word for that, because this shows that it hasn't been, that there's still...
Yeah, maybe it has been buried, but now it's been unearthed, quite right, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and this brings it to light, and hopefully the zero tolerance that we preach, the FA preach, we have to work even harder to make sure that it is zero tolerance, that there is no instances of this in any tier of English football, right down from the Sunday League to the Premier League, because effectively it's all one game. Yeah. So if it's there, it's going to eventually grow. And
well, yeah, I think you're quite right. And, you know, at the crux of this argument, it's all about people's opinions. Mm-hmm. It comes down to everyone's own ideology, whatever it might be. Yeah. And, you know, we can't all agree with all of them. And one man who has had his say this week is Mr. David Johnston, editor of the Chelsea fanzine CFC UK. And he joins us now. David, how are you, sir?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us. And I know, you know, you've been giving interviews all week for the BBC and the like. So, you know, thank you very much for agreeing to speak to us this afternoon. I know you certainly feel as though you've been, you know, hung out to dry a little by the mainstream media in the week of this story breaking up. And I want to give you a chance to set the record straight right here, you know, and right now. And just looking over a few of the comments that have really stuck to the papers, you know, you're quoted as saying, because of the actions of possibly half a dozen people on a metro train in Paris, all the supporters are going to be labelled as racist. And also, you know, I think, and this is you again, I think the majority of Chelsea supporters are disgusted by what's happened. The 2,000 who were in Paris today support a Jewish-owned football team where the majority of players are black and foreign. And yet still the headline for you, David, you know, it's the one we end up with, is that Suleiman S., the man who was subjected to that horrible abuse, is now milking it, in your opinion. Do you stand by that comment?
Unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to explain my comments fully. I've got to say, and no disrespect to Shoreditch Radio, but I love and relish the opportunity to... speak on the BBC, which I did several times on this particular incident. Mm-hmm. The thing is, by the time Friday came, like many Chelsea supporters, we were getting a bit on the defensive, to be honest with you. The actions of four or five people have smeared the club, and given the vast, overwhelming majority of Chelsea supporters a bad name, not only in this country, but, you know, in the eyes of the press around the world. The comments I made on the Drive show on Friday night have upset quite a lot of people. If anyone was upset, I unreservedly apologise if I've... upset them, but I would like to qualify what I said and underline the fact that I didn't have enough time to say what I wanted to say, and, you know, further explain my reasoning for what I did say.
Well, that's great, because, you know, that's what I really wanted to give you the opportunity to do, so please do go ahead.
I've seen couple of interviews with Suleiman S. I heard one on Five Live where he gave one version of events, and I saw another clip of him on YouTube where he gave a slightly different version of events.
What do you mean by that?
Without trying to minimise what happened to the guy, which, you know, all along, and you know, I said it before, you know, I said it on Friday night, what happened to him was dreadful. Any incident of racism is terrible, in my opinion. Suleiman said in one statement that he's experienced racism all his life, and I repeated that on Friday night. Again, on Friday night, I said my heart goes out to him. It's a terrible thing. I also said I don't see why this occasion is so special. What I didn't say, and perhaps, and well,
poor choice of words. I think you'd agree, yeah.
That, in my opinion, each and every incident of racism is, in my opinion, equally as bad as each other. Any incident of racism's bad. There's no better or no worse. However, I do get the feeling that Suleiman has been very badly advised by somebody or other. Personally,
are you referring to a lawyer type?
Fellow Chelsea supporters who've spoken quite openly on this subject, I suspect that it's the lawyer to whom he keeps referring. Chelsea Football Club bent over backwards to try and make amends to Suleiman for what happened. And, you know, while they can't change the course of events on that night, they've offered to bring him and his family over to London to come to Chelsea Football Club.
But, David, sorry to interject there, but do you, I mean, can you understand why he's reluctant to want to come to Chelsea Football Club? Given the, you know, the taste of Chelsea fans that he's given?
Well, to a degree, yeah, but I think, you know, the fact is, if he had have come, he'd have been showered with overwhelming affection by the vast majority of Chelsea fans.
And do you believe that to be a truer
Chelsea
reflection of Chelsea?
Had a whip round to pay him and his family to come over to London before Chelsea, or they started to have a whip round before Chelsea announced that they would bring him over. You know, he'd have felt the love, as they say, I think.
And so, do you feel that to be a truer reflection of your club?
What, the overwhelming majority of supporters? Yes, I do. Friday night, I also said that Suleiman would get ripped to shreds by a defence barrister, meaning that if the perpetrators of the offence are brought to book and have their day in court, I think, in my opinion, that their defence barristers would have a field day with him, judging on the interviews that he's given so far, purely because they're inconsistent. And some of the stuff that Suleiman said doesn't quite add up. I know quite often when, you know, things happen to people, you know, their memory's not as clear as it might be. But, you know, there are obvious inconsistencies in what he said. You know, one particularly striking comment he made is he could see that the carriage was full of Chelsea supporters because they had scarves and Chelsea shirts on. Well, that bunch of guys who was on that train aren't the kind of guys who wear Chelsea shirts and Chelsea scarves. And I didn't see one Chelsea shirt or Chelsea scarf in that video. In one interview, he said he doesn't speak English, but he could understand the word racist and Chelsea. Yet in another interview, he recounts a conversation that he had with the guys on the train, which, you know, is another inconsistency. Now, don't get me wrong, my heart goes out to him.
I was about to say, because David, I take your point, David. I take your point about the inconsistencies, but I mean, is that as important as what actually happened? You know, can we not overlook the inconsistencies, considering what he's been through?
I'm not trying to diminish in any way whatsoever what happened to him. My heart goes out to him. As I said, 99.9% of Chelsea supporters' hearts go out to him. But if he wants to see justice done, he's not going the right way about it, in my opinion, because, as I said, I think any defence barrister representing the perpetrators will have a field day with him. And, if any case is heard in a court in England, under English law, with a jury, I think they'd have the defender, the accused would have a good chance of getting a not guilty.
All right, David, I would accept, I guess, to an extent that it seems strange that he would like both Chelsea and PSG, in fact, to contact his lawyer, as though compensation, while it may be deserved, will help him in what is clearly another opportunity to really combat racism in football in a much wider respect. And David, as far as your club, Chelsea, being labelled a racist, one of the comments you made earlier, it's not a new label. It's something that your club and its supporters have had hanging over them for many years now. And, granted, I don't get to visit Stamford Bridge often, but I know you followed them for a very long time. Are you a part of a racist club?
No, I'm not. I've never been a part of a racist club. Some people who would probably be proud to describe themselves as racists have followed Chelsea Football Club, back in the late 70s and the 80s.
As many other clubs
Chelsea
as well, yeah.
Chelsea was renowned for having a lot of National Front or BNP supporting fans attending Stamford Bridge. They used to sell the Bulldog magazine outside the Shed End. People openly used to read it on the terraces in the Shed and, the North Stand. Paul Canneville, Chelsea's first back player, was horribly abused when he made his debut at Crystal Palace. People giving Nazi salutes and booing.
And throwing bananas, I read.
Bananas,
yeah.
And stuff like that. It was terrible. But, times have changed, things have moved on, and people now don't think like that. And, I dare say that a lot of those, I'll call them young, impressionable guys back then, have wised up. Unfortunately, racism exists in all forms, in all walks of life, in all walks of society. And, it's not necessarily just, a white on anybody else affliction. Everybody is open to suffering from racism. It's a terrible, terrible thing.
David, I'm joined by John Christodoulou, my co-host for the afternoon. He's got a question for you.
Hello, John.
Hi there, David. I was just wondering if I could run a quick stat by you, because we just read in via L'Equipe, the French daily newspaper, that over the past 10 seasons, they've said that there's been 174 reported cases of racist chanting by supporters in the Premier League, and these have all led to banning orders. So these banning orders are last 10 years in the Premier League and you get banned from your stadium. Now, Chelsea were the second highest in this league, table, just behind West Ham, coincidentally. Do you see, has the problem been eradicated in your eyes over the last 10 years, or do you still see instances of racism on the terraces? And if so, does it get reported? Is it being stamped out by Chelsea Football Club?
Chelsea Football Club are doing their best to stamp out any form of racism. They've done probably more than any other football club, purely, on the basis that Chelsea has had the racist label attached to them. Chelsea have done so much to try and, eradicate the problem. And I
Are there any examples of, the types of things that occur in the stadiums to prevent this from happening?
They actively support all the anti-racism campaigns, and the chairman, Bruce Buck, wears an anti-racism badge. And, as I've said, I think I've said in every single interview I've done this week, Chelsea's a Jewish-owned club. The majority of players are foreign. A large proportion of them are black. As far as the youth, the under-18s and under-19s are concerned, luckily for the England national side of the future, we've got a lot of English kids coming through the ranks. The vast majority of them are black. Chelsea had the first black manager in Ruud Gullit in the Premier League.
Quite
the
right.
Head scout at Chelsea Football Club currently, Michael Emenalo, is a black Nigerian. We've got black coaches at Cobham. You know, it's not unusual to see black and Asian people at Stamford Bridge regularly. You know, many season ticket holders and members and, you know, regular attenders. And, you know, I'm sure that if they thought that, you know, the overwhelming majority of Chelsea Football Club or even, you know, a small minority were racist, they wouldn't attend. But they don't, you know, they don't see it. And it does. It, you know, racism is something that doesn't even occur to them when they go to Stamford.
I think that was pretty brilliantly put there, David. And you know, what about the way that Chelsea has responded as a club to this entire scandal? You know, I would argue that in contrast to the shame that this group of individuals have caused you, presumably, you must be pretty proud of the way the club has actually conducted itself this last week.
You know, they've done everything right. They've been fantastic. Jose Mourinho's publicly apologised. The owner, Mr. Abramovich, has said he's disgusted by it. The club, as an institution, has apologised. Steve Atkins, the head of communications, has been fantastic. The PR following this has been faultless, really. It's, you know, I've got to admit, you know, I was a bit dismayed when Suleiman point blank refused to accept Chelsea's apology, and you know, he said, "Oh, they should see my lawyer and or speak to my lawyer." And you know, it's sad, really. You know, as I said, I think if he'd have come
Certainly
to
is.
Chelsea, if he'd have come to London, he'd have seen another side of Chelsea, which you know, those four or five individuals on the metro just don't represent.
David, thank you once again for granting us this interview today. I hope it's really given our listeners plenty of food for thought, and hopefully next time we speak to you on this show, it'll be about something far more positive.
Well, let's hope the next time we speak on this show, I'm celebrating Chelsea smashing Tottenham everywhere in the League Cup final.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
David Johnston, editor for the renowned Chelsea fanzine CFC UK. Johnson, fascinating stuff there, you have to admit. And, you know, having spoken to him now on a couple of occasions, I have to say, I certainly don't believe he is a racist, as he's been labelled.
No.
And, you know, considering he's almost been branded as one since making those comments on Five Live, but of course, while he may not be, there is still a large number of people who hide behind the anonymity of a screen name and revel in the safety of a gang full of like-minded individuals who harbour these, you know, ridiculous racist and sectarian ideologies. And, you know, one story I wanted to mention before we leave this all behind us, and in conjunction with all of this, was of course that Cardiff City's board actually boycotted Tuesday night's game at Wigan in protest of, you know, the alleged racism from its owner and manager. So, you know, we've got Malky Mackay, who is still under investigation, of course, over the alleged sexist, racist, homophobic text messages, and an owner in Dave Whelan, who was fined $50,000, you know, for his own comments in defending Mackay's appointment. And the FA are scratching their heads as to why there is a problem of racism amongst the fans in this game.
I mean, like we said before, it's in every tier of football. It's in every segment of English football, from chairmen to managers, to fans, to players. There's a small minority who, unfortunately, when these events happen, it brings it all to light and it almost tarnishes the whole game, which is just a massive shame. And it's a horrible problem that hopefully, through all the initiatives, some of the things that David mentioned, we can eventually kick out full stop, because none of us want to see it in football.
Brilliantly put, mate. Listeners, Chelsea fans and fans of the game in general, we'd love to know what you think as well. So tweet us at IOTP Show and join in the debate online. You're listening to In Off The Post, kicking some sense back into football. Back in just a minute.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh.
the heavens. No man, no weapon formed against. Yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, glory.
That was, of course, Glory from the motion picture Selma by John Legend and Common. The pair are deservedly picking up an Oscar for that song. Incidentally, it was the only thing a brilliant film depicting Martin Luther King's campaign to secure equal voting rights actually received. But hey, perhaps that's an argument for another day.
Yeah, I think that song links perfectly to what we've just been talking about as well. And it's an old school way of thinking, which it's just not right in the society that we live in at the moment. And hopefully through all the initiatives that are occurring at the moment, we can kick it out for good.
All right, John, still time for one big feature, of course. How does a World Cup Christmas sound to you? This follows the news that a FIFA task force has recommended that the 2022 World Cup in Qatar will be held in November and December. So I'm just going to read off some things that I came across today regarding this, and you can answer them as simply, you can just say stupid. You can just say, what the hell are they thinking? I don't mind, it's up to you. So, you know, key football officials, they met in Doha to discuss a number of options following fears that a summer event would endanger the health of players and fans. That's, of course, because summer temperatures in Qatar can exceed 40 degrees Celsius, while in November and December, they drop to around 25 degrees Celsius. Now, see, at that point, you know, I'm thinking, well, shouldn't someone have probably considered that before voting for them?
Way before.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Way before. And look, this task force has also recommended that the 2022 tournament should be shortened by a few days. So not only are they going to take it away from a summer event and rip up the Premier League season, they're going to knock days off it as well.
Yeah, it's going to be even less in terms of recovery time. If they want players to stay fit and healthy, you're giving them less recovery time in between games. And I mean, we've already heard about like FIGO wanting to extend the World Cup, the amount of teams are in there. Imagine if you had that within that tiny short period of time.
Jesus Christ. And you know, one other thing that I wanted to reel off for you, just as an idea now, it could, as it stands, start on the 26th of November and end on the 23rd of December. Does that sound good to you?
I don't like it, personally. It just ruins every other... The footballing calendar that we've had for years, and we know it works, and we love it.
Yes.
I mean, especially in English football, most European countries get a winter break, but here Christmas is Boxing Day football, New
Certainly
Year's
is
Day,
for me.
The game in between that, and we're going to just forget about that for a season.
According to Dan Roan, it's, you know, not so much a shock, more the day many in football had feared. That's the BBC sports editor, and I think I echo that sentiment. He said, despite rampant opposition, FIFA says the unprecedented break with tradition is in the interests of players and fans.
I don't doubt that. I think it probably is in the interest of players and fans.
How?
In terms of you can't let them watch or play football in that type of heat.
Ah, okay. Yes. Okay, I'll give you that.
But if they knew that was the case, then Qatar should never have been allowed to host the World Cup in the first place. There were far more better viable options already who had bid for the World Cup and who didn't get it, who have the infrastructure in place, who have the correct temperatures to play in, etc., etc.
The things you would think would be fundamental to a bid.
If you're bidding for a
besides
summer World Cup...
Besides pockets of money.
Well, I mean, I don't know
right,
how to
right,
answer
let's go
that.
There. Yeah. No comment.
But in terms of just purely... There were other countries that I reckon could have done almost, because we really don't know how Qatar is going to handle hosting a World Cup. They've never really hosted a major sporting event ever before.
Well, you've said it yourself, the infrastructure is not there. The population of 2 million, native Qataris must be even less.
Yeah, it's about 200 and something thousand, I think I read.
How on earth are they going to even accommodate for the tourists?
It's a really confusing... I really don't even know how to answer that, because, like we say, there's no precedent set in that country of how to do things. They're not really a footballing country anyway. They don't really have a really exclusive league or anything.
That's the positive side to it, that football is branching out. Yes. It is the first tournament hosted in the Middle East. It is about an all-encompassing tournament that is supposed to symbolise world football. And that is a great thing about it. But like you were saying, how great would it have been for America on the back of how... you know, well into they got to the Brazil tournament to have had the chance to host it themselves.
It would have been immense. I mean, we talk about branching out and you would think America is one of these key markets. We haven't quite touched it in terms of football. They have their own, got NBA, the NFL, NHL. They've got
and
their
kind
own
of scratched the surface with them.
But a Summer World Cup in America would have been immense. We've had one before, but it never really caught on.
So a Winter World Cup during the NFL season, during the NBA season...
It's not going to work, is it? You're not going to get the thousands and thousands of people watching on big screens.
It's
watching
like the Rugby World Cup over here, then.
It's just not going to happen. You know, they're going to be far more interested in watching the NFL and watching the NBA when their seasons are in full flow. Because, you know, frankly, it's the same here. If there was a competition like that in America that was so big, would we stop watching the Premier League to watch that instead? Probably not.
Absolutely not. And look, a World Cup for Christmas, it's not exactly top of my list for Santa. But what do you guys think? Tweet us now at IOTP Show and I'll do my best to give you a shout out live on Shoreditch Radio. You're listening to In Off The Post. Stay right where you are because Take A Bow is up next.
It's magic, oh, yeah. 'Cause I see nobody but you. I'm never confused. Hey, and I'm so used to being used. So I love when you're all unexpected. 'Cause I hate when the moment's expected. We live in our lives. Hey, you're my favorite kind of night.
John, my man, I've got to say, I am pretty happy with our work this afternoon. We've searched for the hidden meaning behind Mourinho's latest outburst, denounced these scumbags who continue to shame decent English footballing fans, and of course also tried hard to contain our laughter when FIFA told us that a World Cup at Christmas is for the benefit of fans and players and not their own bank accounts. Nothing left then but for someone to take a bow.
I'll take a bow, son. I mean that, take a bow.
Yes, welcome to the latest instalment of everybody's favourite feature as we celebrate the madcap, wacky side to football. And John, I'm afraid you have the unenviable job of choosing a winner from the following three. And here we go. First up, how can I have possibly ignored the special one, Jose Mourinho, for his post-match comments on Saturday, where he recited every minute that the referee, Martin Atkinson, had made a fatal mistake. Next up has to be a group of West Ham fans for a viral video posted after the Paris Metro incident, which depicted a black man being welcomed onto the carriage by a group of Hammers fans. And last, but by no means least, I've gone with the Southampton stewardess who stopped a Liverpool fan from pitch invading with an impressive WWE rock bottom. That really is the bottom line. And in case you haven't seen these clips, make sure you head over to our official Facebook page at facebook.com/ShoreditchRadioIOTP and check them out. But John, for now, who's it going to be?
I did have one in mind, but then you said stewardess right at the end. And I thought it was just a steward.
I'm pretty sure it was a stewardess.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to the stewardess. That's Andy pretty Gray. Impressive stuff.
Andy Gray, take us home.
I'll take a bow, son. I mean that, take a bow. You have been a beast.
About that.
I think we're going to make like an Oscar pun as well about take the bow, take a bow in terms of how it's better than the Oscars.
Let it pass.
Next year.
Well, sadly, that is all we have time for here on the show. So as my producer hurries me along, let me be the first to thank our special guest, David Johnston, the oh-so-controversial Chelsea fanzine editor, for his time this afternoon. My very special co-host, John Christodoulou. A pleasure as always, my good man.
Thank you very much.
And, of course, to all of you for listening, remember, you can catch up with anything that you might have missed on Mixcloud this week. The podcast of the show is being fine-tuned as we speak, and the links to that will be plastered all over the show's Twitter at IOTPShow, and, of course, on the official Facebook page as well. Help promote the show by sharing it with a friend and join in the debate online by sending us your comments, your thoughts, and your questions. In Off the Post will return Wednesdays from 3 only on Shoreditch Radio. In the meantime, kick some sense back into football and have a great week. I'm not feeling